Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD and iHeart. Thanks for tuning in. That is downloading us. And do rate us. Tell your friends about us. You, the Owner's Manual. This is 927A. On the A segments every week, of course, we give you the latest news of the week. And we got a special for you this week. But the news of the week and what it means for you so you can take action steps to stay younger. And on the B segment this week gave a great interview. Nicholas Bush, One by One, A Memoir of Love and Loss in the Shadows of Opioid America. Next week, Dr. David Eidelberg, the Susan and Leonard Finkel Feinstein Professor of Neurology and Neurosciences at Northwell Health, talks about progress in treating, guess what, Parkinson's disease. And of course, you guys all know how to avoid that. Drink a lot of coffee. Speaking of that, I'll have a gulp pretty soon because helping me today is on his 16th anniversary of his coronary bypass. And we caught him not eating perfect food a couple of times is Jim Graham. Jim, say hello.
Yes, Dr. Mike. How are you this evening?
Good. So we're going to talk now about the news of the week. And I'm going to give it to you as quickly as possible so we can get to Jim Graham's segment. As you know, many of you know, Jim Graham was a friend of mine from a long time ago and is still a friend, hopefully, from current era. Let me get to what I want to get to here. I'm having trouble bringing it up on my computer, so I don't know why, but we'll get it up here. So this is 927A. Sausage fans beware, close to 12,000 pounds recalled due to possible metal bites inside. You shouldn't be eating sausage anyway, just throw it out. Second story. One for Living helps seniors age in place. That is, you're almost three times more likely to stay in your home if you've got a bathroom, a kitchen, and a bedroom on the same first floor and don't have to lift up. Didn't correlate with steps up to the stairs. It just correlates with steps inside the house. Being fit after 50 decreases your stroke risk 50%. Unfit doubles the risk. So get fit. We talked about dancing like your doctor is watching as a great way for your both your mind and your body last week. Cholesterol levels spike after Christmas and through January and February. Get them down earlier. Remember, don't let them stay up. And artificial intelligence can detect and classify acute brain bleeds versus stroke from ischemia, lack of blood flow, important for your treatment. There's no evidence that no-cal sweeteners help you lose weight. Don't bother with them. And this is a real problem. Stroke survivors in the U.S. aren't doing anything to stay healthy. They think once they survive it in the hospital, that's all they have to do. Bull donkey. You got to get healthy afterwards. Exercise. Eat the right foods. Jim will tell you about cabbage, but I caught him cheating. You never cheat. You know what makes the difference for length of life and disability? It's conscientiousness in choosing the right thing. How bad a flu season is 2019? Too early to tell. February is the big month. Hope you got your shots already. You can get a shot now and help yourself if you haven't gotten one. But it looks like we're going to have a season a little less severe than last year, but more severe than 2 years ago. And that's the news of the week. The keys, get fit no matter what your age. Getting fit after 50 lowers your stroke risk and lowers your disability after a stroke risk. Many in the 50s and 60s worry about health insurance. Well, I don't know what you can do about that right now other than making sure you put away enough money early. Sugar sodas, remember, throw away the sausage, get fit. Dancing's a good way of getting fit. And Remember, oh, one more story I wanted to cover, which I don't have a solution for. But apparently mothers who room in with their kids, they're knocking their kids off of their bed at night, and the newborns are falling. I don't know what to say about that. And, of course, get healthy no matter what this year. Make it. Now, this is around, the 22nd of February or so when we release this, so you can be listening to it later. But remember, it's never too late. This is the time when people quit their resolutions. Go back to it. Get healthy. So that's the message. Now, we have a special guest for you today, Jim Graham. Many of you remember Jim Graham. He was my partner in crime probably in the first 10 years of doing this. Then he dissolved away, but he's been involved in hospice since in a long period of time. Jim, welcome back on your 16th anniversary of your coronary bypass procedure.
I must have been doing something right, Mike, because I'm feeling great. I had a procedure the other day just to check me up and see if I'm plugging up any place, and they said no. So I guess I'm doing the right things, eh?
They lie to you all the time, Jim.
Yeah, well, I hope they're not lying this time. They didn't lie. And they fixed me, you know, so. And you're right. You said earlier you caught me cheating at the ballpark a couple of times, but I've kind of settled down a little bit. So, you know,
well,
Mike,
I'm glad you settled down. Now you're doing something in hospice. Tell us about what hospice is, what the origins are, and why it's so important for caregivers.
Okay, listen. If I said the name Florence Wald to you, would it mean anything?
Well, the Florence makes me think of a nurse, so that's the only thing, since I always think of Florence Nightingale as nurses and
right.
All
and
the
you
people
know, it's
Florence.
Really appropriate that her name is Florence. Her name was Florence Wald, and she's commonly known as the mother of American home hospice care. The first home hospice care was done in Bradford, Connecticut in March of 1974. You would think it would be a lot older than that. She was the dean of nursing at Yale University, and she long passed away in 2008. But this lady started something that's an amazing journey, especially for somebody that is suffering from terminal diseases. Hospice covers you up to 6 months being terminally ill. You can have nurses come to your house. You have you're covered. Somebody comes in and takes care of you at your home. You don't have to lay around a hospital. And if you're in a nursing home, people don't realize, too, hospice will go to a nursing home, too, and take care of patients. And it's very important. As you know, my wife passed away in May 20th of 2015. It was diagnosed with cancer in 2012. And towards the end, the last month or so, she was under hospice care. I had no idea. You know, I've heard of hospice, and I know it dealt with death and all that thing, but it was amazing. It was amazing. People would come in. The nurses would come in and tend to her once or twice a week, make sure she had her medications and everything else. And there'd be another lady would come in, and she was a volunteer. She'd come in, and if I needed an hour off or something to go out and do some shopping, and, you know, you get kind of smothered by taking care of a loved one. And hospice is so important to know about. I know, and I was just overwhelmed on how these people cared about Helen. That was her name. You know Helen very well. And after she passed away, people think of hospice as dying. I think of it as extending life and carrying on after life. Because, you know, as much as the patient needs care during their illness, and remind you again, this is done at home, a terminal ill patient for 6 months or less has the right to go home and have hospice care. And it's funded by Medicare, mostly funded by Medicare. So don't worry about the expense and like that. There may be some other charges. But my point really to talk to you today would be people think of death, and it's not death. When the patient is alive, you have to go in. You go in. I'm a volunteer now. You go in, and you're giving life back to that patient. If the patient wants to talk to you, you just listen, absorb what they're telling you, because as a general rule, they'll tell you what they've done during their life if they're able, which is really important, and you have to listen. I'm a big mouth. You know that. And I talk a lot, but I learned to listen. I have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Those two ears are to listen. And once the patient passes on, Mike, nobody thinks. The caregiver, at the time of passing, everybody's around, there's a crowd and everything, but all of a sudden, there's that caregiver all by himself. What is he or she going to do? I'll tell you what, I'll bet you didn't know, hospice steps right up. You can go to any hospice office or, and get bereavement. I'm trying to think of the word now for... bereavement counseling, I'm sorry, I couldn't think of that. And I've been involved with that, and I've noticed I needed it severely after Helen passed away.
Now Jim, let me ask you a couple questions, Jim, if I can.
Sure.
Rather than, so hospice, what's the difference between having it in a facility versus at home? Is there a difference? Do the nurses... in other words, there is also hospice care in certain facilities, right? And you said Medicare pays for either Medicare or Medicaid, I don't know which one, pays for it either
Medicare.
In the house or at a – does it pay for it in a facility as well?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it does, yes. I'm not absolutely positive about that, but I know for a fact that in your home, yes, unless there's extra equipment that's needed in the house, you know. And sometimes they will take care of that, too, depending on the financial status of the patient.
And now, talk to me. Now, after the caregiver, one of the real benefits, I think, for hospice is the caregiver. The recent data on caregivers, by the way, is that 50% of the caregivers, for example, for dementia patients, die before the patient dies, meaning they get their... so severely affected by the stress of it and the problems that they have a problem with it. So tell us about, can you talk to us about the benefits to the caregiver of hospice?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right, Mike. The stress is tremendous. As you know, I've called you when Helen was ill. You know, I called you several times. And I was just out in my backyard where I could keep an eye on things. I needed to talk to somebody else rather than just be in this home. And I was so entrenched and making sure that she was safe, you know, and that does play on your mind. It's really, really, really tough. And, you know, people say, well, you know, I know, but if I didn't take care of myself, Mike, who would have been able to take care of her or the caregiver? The caregiver is the optimal point. You know, the nurses come in once or two or three times a week, which is fine, but you need somebody to talk to. And the volunteers come in. The volunteers for hospice come in, and they'll give you a respite for an hour, two, or three, where you can get out and do some shopping and get out and breathe, Mike. When you're taking care of somebody that's terminally ill, your whole focus is on that person. It's not on you. It's not about you. It's about them at that time. You got to think about yourself. And hospice comes in and gives you the respite where you can go out and take a breath, where you can come back in and start anew. You know, it's like replenishing your life.
So how does it do that? So you were able to come out and talk to me from your, your backyard. Is that what happens
Well,
with most people?
Well, most... You know, if you don't have a contact, if you don't have somebody on the outside, I would imagine it would just, like you said, that it would drive, other people would die before the patient did because the stress is so much. Heart attacks, I'm not sure what causes this, But I'll tell you myself, I was really crazy. And as you know, I am crazy. And hospice was the savior for me. I can tell you experiences. As I'm involved right now with Friends of Hospice in Oswego, New York, and it's an offshoot of the hospice organization in Oswego, and I find it very rewarding because I know when I go into somebody's house, I have this patient, and I'm attentive to the patient. The patient comes first. I'm not, you know, I'm a friend of the patient. Okay, I go in. The patient feels good. I let the patient talk and tell me about their life history. I just sit there and listen to them. All this time, the caregiver is out, maybe shopping, maybe visiting with friends for an hour or two. Maybe there's a party going on someplace, but they absolutely have to get out of the house. When I used to go out in the backyard, there was nobody in the house. I was within shouting range of this house here. I just had to go out on the porch and talk to you and give myself a little rest. Hospice, you know, I can't get over the idea that people talk about hospice with death all the time. I think it has as much to do with life as it does with death.
Now, talk to us about so you're listening, and how many people does hospice serve? Is it underused? Is it used appropriately? Is it more common in upstate New York than other places? Tell us a little more about it.
I don't think it's more common here than it is any other place. You know, Mike, there's people dying every day, you know, and there's a lot of people languishing in the hospital, which Helen did not want. And I'm not sure about the statistics on where it's more prevalent, where hospice and people in hospice is or not. It's just a matter of a fact that if somebody is in the hospital on a terminal issue and has a caregiver or somebody to take care of them, they can always opt to go home, and hospice will step in. You just have to contact through your hospital or your local health department. I don't know what the statistics are.
It sounds like hospice is a very great thing. How long has it been? Now, you said, as I remember, Florence Wald started it. I may get the last name wrong, but she started it.
Well, her name was Wald, W-A-L-D, and it was first started in Bradford, Connecticut, in March of 1974. Like I said before, you would think it would be older than that, but she'd gone to a lecture at in England, I believe, no, at Yale University, being a dean of nursing there, and she'd listened to a British professor talking about this, and she decided to start it up in the United States of America, which is the best thing in the world.
So. This didn't start in America, this movement.
I guess it was operative in London first, or over in the British Isles first, and then came to America. She's the one that founded it in America, the first in-home hospice service.
Great. I think that's all we should talk about today, Jim. I'm going to talk to you one more thing. Now, you're
okay.
Able to care for others in this because you have taken more care of yourself recently.
Absolutely. And you know, it's just like I said before, if I don't take care of myself, how am I going to be able to take care of an ill person or a person that's suffering from a loss of a loved one? And I'm going to tell you right now, right in front of all your listeners, you were my mentor actually on health. Because when I met you in 2002, and I had my cabbage in 2003, I learned more from you than I'd ever known in my life. I got involved with you, the owner's manual, all the books pretty much, and read them, and I understood them, and that's why I'm 16 years healthy after that bypass surgery. And I have you to thank for 99% of that. I had to do 1% to keep myself going. But you were a lot of my survival.
I don't think I had any near that great influence. You did it yourself after I did a little education. So in
I have
any
to
case,
disagree with you, Mike. I really have to disagree with you. With my walking program that I used to do with Helen, I built myself up. You know, I kept going, and it got to be such a habit of walking. I got a habit every day. I had to be out. I walked about 10 to 12 miles a day. And it was because of you and because of being involved with you, the owner's manual. That's where I got it. I got the inspiration from you. I could see how you were. And I know a few people that are related to you that are in terrific health. And I'm going to tell you, it has to be you. You've been a real inspiration to me, Mike, and I can never pay you back for what you've done for me and what you did for Helen during her lifetime.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. We'll talk more, and thank you for that. This has been a special edition, if you will, number... I think it's 920. You've got to correct me, but I think it's 927A of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with a bring back guest on the 16th anniversary of his coronary artery bypass operation. He's still kicking and helping others. That's really what it's all about. It is getting healthy enough to be able to give back. Take care of yourself so you can take care and help give back the way you want to. Jim Graham is a perfect example of that. So thank you, Jim, for coming back. And remember, the news of the week is take care of yourself by dancing like no one is watching or your doctor is watching, to get physical activity, to get some mental stimulation. And walking is what Jim Graham does as his physical activity. Hopefully you'll do those 10,000 steps a day, too. Thanks again. We'll be right back next week. Oh, we're right back in the B segment. We have a great interview on an opioid addiction problem in Opioid America, and you'll hear about from Mr. Bush. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with a new show, new news of the week, and what it means to you next week. Thanks again for downloading us. And thank you, Ben, for great engineering. And especially thank you, Jim Graham, for coming back on this anniversary day.